everyone, and welcome to Cinemantics, the podcast about movies good and bad, mostly bad. I'm your host, Nick Melton, and with me today, a recurring guest. You all know him as Quint.
I'll catch that bird for you. I got a 19-footer off Montauk one time. Took me two barrels, Chief.
Robert Shaw, everybody. Actually, it is Mr. Jeffrey Heatherly.
Yeah, not only that, my Robert Shaw is starting to turn into, like, when Conan O'Brien does his old-time radio voice. two barrels, Chief. See?
Yes. Okay, that's completely unrelated to the movie we're doing today. We've decided to kick off the new year with a classic monster movie from 1954.
Although, after watching it, I gotta tell you, I can't believe this is a classic.
Oh yeah, we have some words, I gotta tell you. Directed by Ishiro Honda, this is Gojira!
Gojira!
Also known as Godzilla.
Gojira!
Not the Roland Emmerich remake.
What did you see, old man? I don't know why, John Renault just became German.
Yeah. I wish John Renault was in this movie.
I do too.
This is the first of an extended series. The goal is to cover every Godzilla movie in chronological order. And this is the first one, which is good because we're getting kind of the least entertaining one out of the way.
It's true. This movie, there were so many moments watching this movie where I threatened to leave. It got so boring.
Yeah, this is, like I said, this was released in 1954, not too long after the atomic bombs were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
So, many months before my mother was born? Actually, just a couple of weeks before my mother was born.
Word. It was released November 3rd, 1954.
She was born November 28th.
So this was made at a time when the atomic bomb still lingered heavily in the minds of the Japanese. So this movie treats Godzilla as sort of a symbolic representation of atomic destruction. And it's not just the giant men in rubber suits fighting and trampling miniatures that the Godzilla series would later become. This actually tries to be a serious monster movie.
And time has not helped that be a successful conceit.
Okay, then. Why don't you offer your initial thoughts?
Okay,
We'll just get them out of the way.
All right. Here's the thing. This movie, I mean, I came into this movie, I knew it wasn't going to be like the other Godzilla movies I've seen. And I knew it certainly wasn't going to be like Roland Emmerich's Godzilla. But the thing is, like, it takes so much time away from Godzilla. I mean, to tell this really uninteresting story about this woman who's, like, kind of indecisive about the men she wants to marry.
Yeah, the woman in question is, what's her name? I don't remember her name.
Emiko.
Yes, she is engaged to Daisuke Serizawa.
Or Dr. Eyepatch, as we like to call him.
But she's really in love with Hideto Ogata. Yeah, Hideto Ogata. He's like a Coast Guard instructor or something. I don't know what he is. He's not really that interesting. None of them are really that interesting.
And neither is the top billed person, Dr. Kaiohei Yamane.
Wow, like if any Japanese are listening to this podcast, we apologize profusely for our pronunciation.
And perhaps, as I mentioned while we were watching the movie, to avoid offending anyone else, perhaps we should refer to him as Dr. Grandpa.
Yeah, that's basically what he is. He's played by the great actor Takashi Shimura. He was in Akira Kurosawa's Ikiru. That's a very famous movie.
He wasn't in Rashomon, was he?
He might have been. Want to find out?
Why not?
I do.
He was in Rashomon.
He was in Rashomon.
I knew he looked kind of familiar.
Rashomon. And in Seven Samurai.
I'm not a fan of Rashomon.
And in Throne of Blood, and The Hidden Fortress, and in Yojimbo Shanjuro, and a bunch of other Godzilla movies. So he was in a lot of Kurosawa movies and a lot of Godzilla films.
All of Asian cinema.
All of Asian cinema. And he was in Kagemusha,
so offensive today.
Yeah, well, you know, you
we're Americans. What are we Americans with our ridiculous ideas of freedom and equality?
Yeah, we're sort of getting off on a rant here. Takashi Shimura is by far and away the most interesting cast member in this movie, aside from Godzilla himself.
Yeah, interesting cast member, but not the most interesting character.
No, he just sort of broods. Everybody in this movie just sort of broods.
Yeah, it's
if you're the woman, you break down crying every 30 minutes.
Yeah, at just really random intervals, often having nothing to do with anything.
Yeah, she feels conflicted about about being in love with this other guy, even though she's engaged. But in the end, there's a really convenient plot twist that just makes it completely irrelevant. We'll talk about that, too.
Yeah. Do we want to talk about the plot, basically, here?
Yeah, let's talk about the plot. Ships are being destroyed off of an island in Japan. I don't know where Odo Island is in relation to Tokyo.
Or if it's even real.
Or if it's even real. We could look it up, but I don't want to.
Yeah.
So they send a scientific research team out there only to discover that it is a giant creature.
From the Jurassic period, we're told.
Yeah, we're told it's sort of an intermediary creature between dinosaurs and whatever came after dinosaurs. That's his explanation for this strange monster that bears no real resemblance to a lot of things.
You know, in Japan, dinosaurs come first and the other thing comes second. Or sometimes not at all.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's from Austin Powers. Or
oh, right.
A modified quote from Austin Powers.
Right. Okay. I have seen Austin Powers. So I feel bad that I didn't get the reference. But anyway, they discover that it's Godzilla. They break the news to the public and they form, like, anti-Godzilla squads. Which prove useless, as always,
of course.
In stopping Godzilla, who goes on a couple rampages and leaves the city in a sea of flames.
A sea of flames. Boy, they were really obsessed with that description. They loved that description.
After his rampage follows lots and lots and lots of mournful shots of dead people and crying children and somber music to really let it sink in that he represents the atomic bomb. And then they discover that Dr. Eyepatch has been working on this secret weapon that, well, it wasn't really intended to be a weapon. I don't know why he was working on it, because all the movie, he's just lamenting its existence and how it could be used for evil. And I was thinking, why the hell did you invent it if you were so worried that it would be used for evil?
Well, then again, as we said so many times watching this movie, are you looking for logic?
Yes.
Well, then again, you asked me the same question, and I said the same thing.
Yes. Now, in retrospect, I am looking for logic, because this is the only Godzilla movie that I can think of in memory that takes itself seriously.
Unless, we still have to figure out what Roland Emmerich was about, but we got time to cover that one.
When we get to Roland Emmerich's remake, that's way down the line, because that's like number 18 in the Godzilla series.
18 of like 21.
Of like 20, no, it's closer to 30. There are a lot of Godzilla movies out there.
Gosh.
But we'll get to it eventually.
I can't wait.
For Roland Emmerich's Godzilla.
I love that movie so much.
Yeah, it's very entertaining. More entertaining than this movie.
Most certainly.
I feel like right now we should just mention that a lot of people may not have seen the version we're referring to.
Yeah, this is the original full-on Japanese release.
I decided that when we were going to be watching these films, we should watch the original Japanese movies rather than butchered American censorship remakes. It's not like they were censored. They just sort of edited it weirdly. In 1956, I believe, this movie was heavily edited and released in the U.S. as Godzilla, King of the Monsters, which is how a lot of people in America have seen it. It's about 18 minutes shorter than the original Japanese version, and it inserts, because he is not in the Japanese version, Raymond Burr as an American, a reporter who is sort of commenting on the events of the film.
TV's Perry Mason.
Basically, the only thing he does is stand in front of a window and watch the carnage somberly.
Oh, the destruction. I've never seen destruction like this before.
Yeah, basically.
Once again, I can't confirm that's actual dialogue.
Yeah. yeah, we'll just sort of scroll down here and see what the good old Wikipedia page has to say about Godzilla King of the Monsters. Yeah, it doesn't say anything new. Oh, they did minimal dubbing, too. The version was released in Japan in 1958 in faux widescreen format. I don't know if you realize that this was shot in a basically full-screen aspect ratio.
I wasn't really noticing that. I was too busy trying not to be bored to death.
Oh, well, I noticed it, and it was evidently surprisingly popular. They re-released it into two theaters in North America in 2004 and grossed something close to $40,000, which is like $20,000 a screen.
How about that?
In its opening weekend and remained in release for basically another like 8 months. Never playing on more than 6 North American screens at any given point. By the end of its run, it had grossed $412,000. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Now, since we're down here, we might as well just go for it. The 2004 re-release was highly praised by many critics who had never seen it in its original form without Raymond Burr. So critics really like it. So,
well, I mean, critics like some really boring shit. I don't mean to be that guy.
Entertainment Weekly says that Godzilla, an ancient beast roused from the ocean depths and irradiated by Japanese H-bomb tests, reduces Tokyo to a pile of ash, yet like Kong, he grows more sympathetic as his rampage goes on.
Does he?
The characters talk about him not as an enemy, but as a force of destiny, a god. The inescapable subtext is that Japan, in some bizarre way, deserves this hell. Godzilla is pop culture's grandest symbol of nuclear apocalypse, but he is also the primordial spirit of Japanese aggression turned with something like fate against itself.
I didn't get any of that out of this movie.
It's very hard to really read that much into it. Especially, I mean, we're of a more recent generation. I mean, we were born in the 80s.
Yeah.
That's a full 3 decades after this movie came out to begin with, and we're viewing it now, like, almost 25 years into my life.
Not only that, I'm viewing it as a person who is so used to, like, the Godzilla films of later days.
Yeah, the later, like, Godzilla versus Gigan, Godzilla versus Megalon.
Yeah,
you know, those are classics.
Son of Godzilla.
Son of Godzilla is a terrible movie. Oh, I can't wait to watch it again.
Oh, boy.
Because it's horrible. but watching it with 50-some-odd years, you know, removed from its original release, a lot of the subtext is a bit harder for younger audiences to grasp onto. So for us, we were just watching it as a film and not so much as an analogy, which is clearly what it was meant to be.
Yeah.
A lot of people are likely to be surprised by what they see, writes Luke Y. Thompson. The 1954 Japanese cut is shot like a classic film noir, and the build-up to Tokyo's inevitable thrashing is quite slow by today's standards. Totally true.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about the film noir. There's no real femme fatale or any of,
unless
those tropes.
Unless Emiko is supposed to be a femme fatale.
Well, she's
really
not a very convincing one.
A really whiny lady.
The echoes of World War II are very strong, I agree there too, and the devastation wrought by Godzilla, played by Haruo Nakajima. Now we know who the first guy in a Godzilla suit was. I was actually mentioning during the movie, I wonder what the guy in the Godzilla suit was feeling. Because I'll bet later, when it became a pop culture icon, the people were like, yes, I get to be the next Godzilla. But this guy probably had no idea that Godzilla was going to end up being an icon. So
yeah.
I wonder what he was thinking as he was just sort of standing there in this rubber suit having to trample miniatures.
Yeah, Godzilla didn't have any, you know, Ian Fleming novels behind this.
Yeah, I know. The devastation wrought by Godzilla is not sugar-coated. It eerily mirrors that of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and the deaths and injuries are dwelt upon. The monster itself is not fully revealed for quite a while, and even when he finally shows up, he's a malevolent black predator with glistening skin who stays mostly in the shadows, many times more fearsome than the green-skinned cookie monster who showed up in the various sequels to layeth the smacketh down on the candy asses of numerous alien vaders and ugly leotards.
I would like to salute Luke Y. Thompson for stealing lines from The Rock.
Oh, one of the few recent negative reviews was written by Roger Ebert in the Chicago Sun-Times.
I don't know how to feel about that, because you know how much I take issue with Roger Ebert these days.
Ebert admitted the film was an important one and properly decoded was the Fahrenheit 9/11 of its time, but he also said, in these days of flawless special effects, Godzilla and the city he destroys are equally crude. Godzilla at times looks uncannily like a man in a lizard suit stomping on cardboard sets, as indeed he was, and did. Other scenes show him as a stuffed, awkward animatronic model. Remember I mentioned the shot of the tail, like, smashing something and it looked more like stop motion than,
yeah,
like, some guy pulling a tail with a string? This was not state-of-the-art, even at the time. King Kong was much more convincing, and that was back in 1933. When Dr. Sarazawa demonstrates the oxygen destroyer to the fiancé of his son, the superweapon is somewhat anticlimactic. He drops a pill into a tank of fish, the tank lights up, and he shouts, "Stand back!" The fiancé screams, and the fish go belly up. Yeah, that'll stop Godzilla in his tracks. I gotta admit, sometimes Roger Ebert, it has a way of phrasing things in just the right sarcastic tone that makes it sound not quite pretentious.
Yeah, but then he also says things about, like, children banging pots in the music of hell.
Oh, yeah, Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. Yeah, about the Oxygen Destroyer, what'd you think of that? I know you were not amused by the Oxygen Destroyer.
Yeah, because the first time, it takes, like, 40 minutes after the first time we see him drop it in the tank for us to find out what it even is.
I thought that was way more effective than when they showed what it did, because it was just reaction shots and her, like, leaving the room, his lab, like, really emotionally distraught. And then when they finally reveal it, it's really disappointing.
It's a tiny, like, jingle bell that spouts bubbles.
Yeah, basically the Oxygen Destroyer looks like it's just spouting more oxygen into the water, and that somehow turns everything... It makes fish and whatnot fade into skeletons.
Plus, you can't help but wonder what it would have been like if people had known that Oxygen Destroyer was, in fact, a product that was heavily touted by the late, great Billy Mays. I'm kidding. That's not at all true.
I wish that Billy Mays was in this movie. It might have sent it might have made it a bit more entertaining.
I wish Billy Mays had gotten to be in films before we lost him.
Yeah.
Sad times.
Yeah, we talked about how the story, apart from Godzilla, is really a very boring one. The family drama is really uninteresting.
It's like, by today's standards, it feels like filler. Just absolute filler.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what they were trying to do with that, because that little family story didn't touch on any grand themes like Godzilla himself did. So it just sort of felt like they wanted to make human connections, but none of the human characters, the main human characters, are in any real danger in the whole movie.
It's true.
So,
I mean, let me ask you a question, Nick. When you're watching this movie and you see Godzilla trampling through the streets of Tokyo, do you get the sense that there are people in these buildings, or do you think they've been pretty thoroughly evacuated?
Well, they have these shots of these really empty Tokyo streets, and I would imagine most of these buildings have been evacuated. But the one I do like that the movie doesn't skirt the fact that he's trampling and burning people to death. I mean, they show like people in the hospital with mourning kids and people screaming because their faces have been burned, you know.
Playing some song that sounds kind of like Silent Night.
Well, yeah, that's the dramatic montage that convinces Dr. Sarazawa, a.k.a. Dr. Eyepatch, to use the Oxygen Destroyer against Godzilla, even though he was having a big, long, and thoroughly uninteresting moral quandary about it.
Big, long, and thoroughly uninteresting. That all sums up the movie.
Yeah. Although, I did want to ask, what did you think of the scenes of Godzilla trampling Tokyo? Because those, to me, were undoubtedly the highlight of the movie.
But not really much of one, to be honest. I mean, listen, we talked about how there is something to be said for, you know, the fact that he only comes out at night, mostly, and that, you know, he mostly only come out at night.
Mostly.
That was so perfect. But anyway, no, the fact that he comes out at night, you know, I mean, he's very poorly lit. He's just a big, scaly blob crushing buildings. And you did talk about how, like, there's that new modern trope of, you know, it's best when you don't see it. It's actually scarier when you don't see it. But I guess it doesn't help that we've had all these years of Godzilla movies to actually know what he looks like. And to know that even in later movies of, like, the Toho company, he looked a hell of a lot better than he does in this movie. His facial expressions in this movie are god-awful.
Yeah, and well, I could argue otherwise. I think that some of the other Godzilla movies, his face looks really dumb. Like, in movies like Son of Godzilla, where he's clearly a good guy.
Yeah.
They got rid of the big fangs in front, and they make him look cuddly and just like some guy in a cuddly monster suit. Well, it wasn't until, like, Godzilla 1985, which is just the American title. I forget what it's called. Godzilla Returns or something. Where they gave him back the old menacing look.
Is that movie intended to be, like, a direct sequel to this one?
No.
Or is it just another in the long line?
It's just another in the long line of Godzilla. They're just reviving the classic incarnation of Godzilla, right, of him as a rampaging monster rather than protector of mankind. It doesn't matter if he's a protector or monster or not, because either way, Tokyo's going to get destroyed.
There goes Tokyo. Go, go, Godzilla.
In a sea of flames.
In a sea of flames!
Yeah, we didn't really finish talking about the Oxygen Destroyer. We talked about how cheesy the scene is where they show it for the first time, but I mean...
Or rather, don't show it.
Or rather, but then when they do, it's so disappointing. But, like, the ending scene where they go to kill Godzilla with it, I mean, we were both like, this is the stupidest thing we've ever seen.
Yeah, like...
wouldn't the Oxygen Destroyer suck oxygen out of the entire ocean?
Yeah, that's one thing. I
argue that it's not a large enough device to suck oxygen out of the entire ocean.
There's going to be some, like, fallout, if you will. Some small amount of the Oxygen Destroyer chemical that's going to spread out into the ocean. It's going to do something shitty. You know, like, I mean, it's... I mean, in addition, we also have, you know, the cartoonish way in which creatures in the oxygen-destroyed water just magically turn to skeletons.
Especially Godzilla. It's more convincing when it happens to the fish.
It really is, actually.
But when Godzilla turns into a skeleton, it's really strange. It really just, like, looks like they faded into a skeleton rather than him dissolving. And then the skeleton dissolves into nothing. Bizarre.
Really bizarre.
And then Dr. Eyepatch is like, oh, I'm still in my moral quandary, so I'm going to kill myself down here so that we can...
Yeah, kill himself. Can I talk about my issues with that scene?
Yes, but first of all, I just wanted to say, if you're upset that we're spoiling the movie, it's been out for 55 years now.
Thereabouts, yeah.
Thereabouts, so please... Don't hold spoilers against us, but continue.
Yeah, I'm going to spoil another movie just for the heck of it. At the end of On Her Majesty's Secret Service, James Bond's Bond girl gets shot in the fucking forehead. Suck on that, America.
But what relevance did that have to Godzilla?
Absolutely nothing.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. I thought you were going to link the two in some way, but no.
No. Well,
that's like the one Bond movie nobody cares
that's
about.
That's the George... Well, I mean, a lot of people like it. It's the George Lazenby one. But anyway, no. What I was going to talk about is the fact that Dr. Eyepatch and, you know, fiance, or wannabe fiance,
they Beyonce.
Go, Beyonce.
I wish that Fiance was played by Beyonce.
That'd be crazy. They go into the ocean, though, in these old-time diving suits, and they're walking around with a canister containing the larger oxygen destroyer in this little tube. And the one thing that bothers me is they're walking around in these supposed-to-be, like, state-of-the-art diving suits that have holes in them. Like, it looks like the hole in someone's jeans. There's a massive patch out of this one guy's elbow. So when it comes to the big, allegedly dramatic moment where he slashes his oxygen tube open, allowing himself to drown, I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure he would have drowned already because of the big fucking hole in his
suit. Or the oxygen destroyer would have got through the suit and turned him into a skeleton.
Yeah, one of the two things.
Either way, he would have died before the dramatic gesture.
And either way, it's fucking stupid.
However, it is cool when we first see him because he's wearing sunglasses.
And an eye patch. Well,
it's like he's so badass, he has to wear an eye patch and sunglasses.
Yeah.
It actually looks kind of funny because you can see the strap from the eye patch, but you can't see the eye patch itself.
Contrary to the moment just before he and Fiance go underwater and he's got that weird, like, Gilligan hat on over his eye patch.
Yeah, it's like a safari hat.
Yeah.
There's like nothing more to talk about of these characters. Like, I mean, they're so uninteresting.
They're so uninteresting, and yet they're so mockable.
Yeah. Like, Fiance is just always crying, always, like, she's a really bad actress, in this movie.
Well, she's not Fiance. She's Emiko. This is the code I'm going by. She's Emiko. Wannabe Fiance is just Fiance. There's Dr. Eyepatch and Dr. Grandpa.
You meant the guy by Fiance.
Yes, I did.
No, because Dr. Eyepatch was the Fiance. And she wanted to break it off with him so that she could get engaged to the other dude. I thought by Fiance you were talking about her. Never mind.
Yeah, I'm sure I confused the audience too. I apologize.
Well, then that would be really weird if Beyonce played him.
But anyway, we're talking about Emiko. I want to talk briefly about the way women are treated in this movie.
Okay.
Because in addition to the fact that she's crying 24/7 in this movie, if you can call it 24/7 in a 90-minute movie, there's the scene where they're at that weird, like, council, and there's that table with the one scientist. Was it Dr. Grandpa, or was it somebody else?
It was somebody else, I think.
Okay. Yeah. But then there's that other table, Dr. Grandpa. There's that other table where there's that really just passionate woman sitting there.
Like, we must release this information to the public, and the other guy's arguing, no, we shouldn't. But she's,
but I'm
really
trying to remember
insistent.
What exactly he says to her.
No, he's like, be quiet!
And she does.
And she does, yeah. He just, like, yells at her, barks at her, and...
It's like, women don't know science, leave it to the men.
You know, then nobody bats an eye. And then there's that guy behind him with the mustache. He's like,
I agree.
I don't know who that guy is, and he's unimportant, but we thought it was funny.
You know who's one of my favorite characters and only shows up in the last, like, 5 minutes of the movie?
Who?
French-Asian guy.
Oh, yeah, the French-Asian guy.
Hello, I am French-Asian guy. Always so sad this creature has been destroyed.
But yeah, he's wearing a beret, but he's Japanese.
We must all mourn Dr. Eyepatch. He has been killed in this horrible tragedy.
That's a very weird accent.
I don't know why I'm doing it.
You need to combine Japanese and French into a viable accent.
Yeah. Clearly something better than what I just tried to excuse. I mean,
Quentin Tarantino did it in Kill Bill. Sophie Fatale is French and Japanese.
It's true.
If she could do it, then you can. Maybe. I mean, she doesn't really have a heavy, thick French accent.
No, she doesn't.
Oh, well. Ooh. Yeah, we can talk about cool stuff, like the monster design. As this was the first Godzilla movie, the monster story itself had been necessitated by an emergency. The producers had planned a completely different film, but that project had fallen apart. Toho demanded to film any film within a short time. During an airplane ride, producer Tomoyuki Tanaka had read of the Lucky Dragon incident and was inspired.
It
says here, a real Japanese fishing ship, Lucky Dragon 5, was overwhelmed when the U.S. Castle Bravo nuclear test had a yield of 15 megatons rather than the planned 6 megatons.
Ah.
Military personnel, island natives, and several Lucky Dragon 5 crew members, persons believed to be in a zone of safety, suffered from radiation sickness, and at least one died 6 months later. This created widespread fear of uncontrolled and unpredictable nuclear weapons, which the filmmaker symbolized with Godzilla. The actual event played a major role in drawing attention to the hazards of nuclear fallout, and the concerns were widespread about radioactivity contaminated fish affecting the Japanese food supply. So, he read about the Lucky Dragon incident and was inspired. The monster angle was derived from the success of Warner Brothers' 1953 film The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, which I would also like to cover at some point, because Ray Harryhausen did the special effects for that.
Is that the movie where they got that footage from the Bagel Bites commercial with, like, the dinosaur monster, whatever it may be, like, doing that weird thing with his lip? It looks kind of like Billy Idol.
I don't know. Maybe. Several
pizza in the morning, pizza in the evening, pizza at supper time. When it's pizza on a bagel, you can have pizza anytime. I wish we'd saved that for the stinger.
Yeah, me too. Several monsters had been contemplated. The most famous one, they wanted Godzilla to look like an octopus. Yeah, they finally settled on a mutated dinosaur which looked like a cross between a T-Rex, an Iguanodon, and a Stegosaurus. The Godzilla suit had actually been a last resort. Special effects designer Eiji Tsuba... Oh, I should have looked at this before I looked at that.
Tsuburaya.
Tsuburaya had been deeply impressed by the stop-motion method used in King Kong. However, that method was far too costly and time-consuming. However, stop-motion would be used briefly in one scene where Godzilla destroys the Nichigeki Theater with his tail. Who said it? Me. And later in King Kong vs. Godzilla, it was decided that the easiest way to go was a stuntman in a monster suit and a scale model of Tokyo. This also proved difficult because the first attempt at a Godzilla suit was far too stiff and heavy, nearly impossible to use. They finally fit on a design that worked, but even that was grueling. The stuntman would suffer numerous bouts of heat exhaustion and dehydration. The suit had to have a valve to drain the sweat from it. Ew.
Ew.
One of Godzilla's names during production was Anguirus. That name was saved and later reused as the name of Godzilla's opponent in the sequel. Anguirus would later become Godzilla's closest ally in the series. You remember him? He's the dude with the spiky shell?
Maybe?
How many Godzilla films have you seen?
That I can, like, remember the plots of? One.
Oh, okay.
But that I've seen? Maybe, like, five.
Hmm. Oh, filming. We were talking about how it looked really bad, like shot in black and white.
Yeah, there were even some scenes that looked like they were shot with the same cameras that like Birth of a Nation were shot on.
There's that one specific shot you're thinking of. Yeah. And that's the same. That's like right coming up with that stupid shot where he bites down on the tower where the newspaper reporters are standing. And yeah. They're like, this is our last broadcast. Goodbye, Nation. Goodbye. And then they scream and fall to their deaths. It's awesome. Toho Studios had balked at the suggestion of filming Godzilla in color. Ironically, the cheaper, grainy black and white film had actually enhanced the special effects because they hid wires and other things in the shadows, and otherwise adding to the overall chill of Godzilla's nighttime attacks. 2 years later, Toho would film Rodan in color, and from then on, Toho would use color.
Ah.
That's just some cool-ass stuff. Let's see. Do we have any cool, interesting trivia? Or have we covered most of this?
I think we have, actually.
The name Gojira is a combination of the Japanese words for gorilla and whale. The monster was so named because its original design was that of a gorilla whale monster, which is recounted by people who worked on the film. Ooh, the first Godzilla suit weighed around 200 pounds. No wonder nobody could use it.
It's true.
Because of the complexity of the production, the entire film was storyboarded. This is believed to be the very first time this was done for a Japanese film. Yeah, I don't care about the rest of this. So, the one last thing I would like to talk about is the music. What'd you think about that?
Well, I was just going to say, it was really exciting to hear the theme to this wonderful program played on multiple occasions throughout this film.
Yes, this is the film that my theme music comes from.
Indeed.
And people who have seen Godzilla before will doubtless have recognized it by now, but it's still cool.
I mean, when I think of Godzilla, I actually think of the music that... Paul Chapman used for the first couple of episodes of the original, Did I just almost name his podcast after mine? What the hell is going on? The greatest movie ever podcast. What the hell just happened, Nick?
You almost called his podcast your podcast.
That's like the third time I've done that.
Aggression. Jeffrey Heatherly moves towards global takeover.
Gosh.
Destroy all podcasts.
Please talk about something that doesn't make me sound crazy.
All podcasts attack. Sorry, I'm just taking Godzilla titles and putting the word podcast in.
Autobots, transform, and roll out.
I wish Peter Cullen were in this movie.
Me too.
He would do the voice of Godzilla. I am Godzilla.
Rah, rah, rah.
No, he needs to speak English.
Oh.
Why? If it was just going to be a human being doing Godzilla noises, they should have hired Frank Welker.
Yeah, but this was before Frank Welker.
Yeah, unfortunately. So do we have much more to say about Gojira?
Other than Gojira! Gojira!
That is a
Gojira
remake!
What did you see, old man?
With German Jean Reno.
I don't know why he's always German. you want me to do the thing that we usually do?
Sure.
Nick Melson, final thoughts on Gojira.
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 What did you see, old man?
Gojira.
No, I asked you first. You tell me.
Really? Are you making me sit here and talk about something?
Yes.
You know what he saw?
What?
A movie version of the Jeffersons, Tracy. I love it.
No, I wish your torn were in this movie, too.
Yes.
He would play Godzilla.
Yes.
No, we were talking about recasting the movie with weird actors. Bob Hoskins as Godzilla. Not even in a suit. It's just Bob Hoskins trampling miniatures. And he's not really saying anything. He's just making...
I'm Bob Hoskins.
No, he's just making that bug-eyed face that he makes. And he's just going, and smashing things. I would watch that in a minute.
Yes.
Bobzilla.
Bojira. Bojira.
Yes.
But seriously, final thoughts on Godzilla.
Well... It's hard for me to say anything too negative about this movie because it is a monster classic, a monster movie classic. It created a cultural icon.
It did.
It is an important piece of monster movie history. And it's not a bad movie. It's just... The thing is, when you watch it now, it just feels kind of dated and insignificant unless you come from a cultural background or have the knowledge to really appreciate where the filmmakers were coming from. If you're watching it like us, you know, basically ignorant American, you know... college-age fellows, some of the subtext might be lost. The Godzilla scenes, for their time, I guess, are not entirely unimpressive, although they're not that impressive either.
No.
I like it, I guess. I don't love it. I don't feel like it's a movie I have to watch all the time. I bought that DVD. I bought the two-disc special DVD release of it that has the Godzilla original cut on it, and then the American version, Godzilla King of the Monsters. I bought it basically on a whim just because, ooh, it's a nice DVD release of this classic film.
Yeah.
But I think I've only watched it twice.
Really?
Once, including today.
Yeah.
So that should tell you something. I mean, go out and see it if you're interested in the genesis of Godzilla.
Yeah, if you want to see where it all started.
Yeah, definitely.
Before it got awesome.
Before it got awesome. And if you want to see really badly animated light on his back spikes before he shoots fire out of his mouth.
That sounds like an airplane landing.
And just looks like smoke.
Yeah.
In this movie, the fire breathing is kind of weird because it's not so much breathing fire as it is in later films as it is he's sort of like blowing radiation onto things, and that makes things melt and catch on fire.
In addition, the first time he did it, I could have sworn he'd like frozen the things. It looked more like they were covered in ice.
Yeah. They were really just supposed to be glowing.
That's weird.
So, and as for you, final thoughts on Gojira?
Boring as fuck.
What did you see, old man? Well, that was when you were supposed to tell me what you saw.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I got confused. I was like, I was arranging matches. That's a reference no one's going to get. Anyway, but in all seriousness, I mean, yeah, I'm going to say it again. Boring as fuck. Because, wow. I mean, listen, I understand it was the 50s, and this was exciting to them back then. These stupid subplots about, you know, people being engaged and wanting to be with other men. And, you know, these weird, you know, allegories for Hiroshima and things like that. I mean, I guess it makes sense back then, but today it's just like, where the fuck is Mothra? You know, where is Matthew Broderick with his terrible Broadway acting style?
You know, that reminds me. You know how you were just talking about being in love with other men? At the very end of the movie, like, before Dr. Eyepatch cuts his oxygen tube, he's like, be happy, both of you. And it's like, that implies that he knew from the very beginning that she was in love with the other dude.
Yeah.
And he was such a douchebag that he wouldn't just tell her and let her go be with him.
Yeah.
What a douchebag. You're really a douche, Dr. Eyepatch. Anyway, continue with your final thoughts.
No, that's about it. That's about it. Boring as fuck. I hate this relationship B-story stuff. Godzilla's attacks were only mildly fun to watch. They were the bright spots, but... And, of course, French-Asian guy.
Well, there you have it. The first of many Godzilla reviews in what we are calling the Year of Godzilla.
In tribute to that wonderful...
In tribute to...
teaser TV spot. Seek it out on YouTube, folks. It's a teaser TV spot for the 1998 Roland Emmerich Godzilla film. I believe it's Godzilla New Year's Eve... teaser spot or something like that, and it's one of my favorite teasers for any movie.
I'm sure
ever.
We'll mention it when we get to Roland Emmerich's remake.
Indeed.
I can't guarantee we'll cover all the Godzilla movies in one year because there's just so many of them.
Yeah. The first,
but we are nonetheless calling it the Year of Godzilla.
The first in your 438 part series, Better Noah Godzilla films.
Oh man, if there were 400 Godzilla films, we'd never get through them.
I wish Stephen Colbert were here.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
I would like a cardboard cutout of Stephen Colbert doing that pointy thing that he does at Godzilla with his arm wrapped around Godzilla's shoulder doing that point thing.
Yeah.
And watchers of the Colbert Report will know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But anyway, you have been listening to Cinemantics, the podcast about movies good and bad, mostly bad. I am Nick Melton.
I'm Jeff Heatherly.
Also,
snap diggity boom bop. I don't know why that just happened.
Also known as Quint.
To swimming with bow-legged women.
Farewell and adieu to you fair Spanish ladies.
No.
Farewell and adieu, Godzillas of Spain.
This is getting strange.
I'm sorry.
Let's just end this show.
Okay. Well, we basically already introduced ourselves, so I guess all that's left to say is...
Gojira!